The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into hour three, it is a delight to do so, as we usually do on Mondays, to be joined by Brandon Weichert, Brandon J. Weichert, W-E-I-C-H-E-R-T. His books include Winning Space, How America Remains a Superpower, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, and Biohacked, China's Race to Control Life, a new book coming out later this year on Ukraine and Russia. He writes as well for The National Interest, and you can follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, at WeTheBrandon. Happy Monday, Brandon. I hope you're well.
How you doing? I'm doing all right. Good. How are you doing?
Oh, we're hanging in there. We kind of labor under, I don't know how to say this without sounding really grinchy, but we kind of labor under the futility of being subject to national networks that think everything is New York and Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, Fox News, top story, and for most of every hour the story, has been something along the lines of eclipse mania.
Oh, my God.
And, okay, all right. You know, I'm for a good event. All day, every hour? Really? Is this what Americans want? Maybe it is. Maybe they're tired of the politics. Maybe they're tired of world affairs. I don't know. But it seems to me it's about a five-minute story.
It's a five-minute story for, like, maybe less than a day.
Yeah.
I think the news coverage and all the rah-rah surrounding it has been far more extensive than the actual event itself. I happened to be going to pick up my kids from school, and I was in the car line, and it got a little almost like it was cloudy outside for about 4 minutes, and then the sun, I live in Florida, so it's always sunny here.
Yeah.
The sun popped right back out, and I had the news on the radio, and they were announcing that it's happened, it's happening, it's done. And I was sitting there going, this was it?
Yeah.
This was the big event?
Yeah.
I mean, and then they were talking about last night here on the local news is that we might have a temperature drop.
Yeah.
It was 81 degrees before, and it was 81 degrees during, and it was 81 degrees after. So everybody really hyped this thing up, and I think it's another symptom of media malpractice that has dominated our media industry for the last 30 years, and it's really becoming a problem.
Do you think that there is a religious element to it, or is it at the risk of being too grinchy about this, an anti-religious element to it? Is it a distractive thing? It's just so damn odd, because I think vast majority had the experience you had. Certainly everyone in Arizona did.
I was also working. This is a work day. It's a Monday.
Yeah.
So I was also, I really didn't even care.
Yeah.
No, for me, I think it's actually, maybe for some people, there's some weird religious thing going on. But I think for the media, it's just about clicks and views. And I think that we live in such a base society today. I think that most people today are probably not as smart as we were 30 years ago. And I think that the media is trying to pander to this notion that people's attention spans won't last more than 10 seconds. They can't handle complexity. And so let's give them something really different to look at for 5 minutes. It's the same thing for why all these news organizations, national news, international news organizations, I remember in the 2010s and early 2000s, they would spend hours covering a high-speed chase in
LA.
Yeah. It's the same thing. It's like, forget about anything about the news, and let's talk about local news in LA. Nobody cares outside of LA. I didn't care. It's the same thing with this eclipse, only it's even worse. It's even baser now, and it's really just, it's again, it's media malpractice.
All right, let me take it from there and shift it to when they do the news, when they do cover the news, or things that they want us to think are newsworthy. I would think a phone call between President Biden and Xi Jinping of China is newsworthy. Got about an hour last week, and then we just moved on. Janet Yellen is in China today, I suppose, talking trade or something. And right, yeah. And maybe that's actually getting more attention, weirdly, than a phone call with Joe Biden and President Xi Jinping. We, in other words, have this tendency, and that's not even the biggest story, although it might be. It might be pregnant with big stories under it. We have this tendency to jump from lily pad to lily pad, from crisis to crisis, major story to major event, and then in 48 hours, totally forgotten and moved on from.
Yeah. No, that's right. There was another phone call that happened in the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
It's getting even less attention.
Yeah.
It's the phone call between the Iranian leadership and the Biden White House, in which the Iranians, and of course the media is reporting it like, oh, they called Biden and they laid down the law and they told him, if you don't get Israel in line, we're going to open up with our long-range missiles and that'll be the end of Israel. Well, actually, what really happened was the Iranians were threatening to go full bore against Israel, and Israel didn't care, and they kept doing what they were going to do in their national interest, the Israelis were, and the Iranians realized, oh my gosh, we've pinned ourselves into a corner, and if we don't attack, we're going to look weak, but if we do attack, we're probably going to get rocked by Israel and their allies. And so they got on the phone, and they called Joe Biden, and they huffed and they puffed, and they blew Joe Biden's house down. And he got on the phone with Netanyahu and said, if you don't stop this offensive, we're gonna cut you off. And so that, to me, is a phone call worth reporting. But yep, even when it's reporting, the media is not reporting it right. They're reporting that Iran was calling from a position of strength to stop Israel. I take that as Iran threatened the president of the United States to cut off a vital ally in Israel, and the president of the United States acquiesced. That is the story. That's the scary thing here. Now, imagine what's going to happen when Taiwan gets hit by China and the stakes are even higher and the threat's even more directed against the United States. And this guy in the White House, if it happens under him, and it will, this guy is going to be the one saying, oh, I better take a call from Xi and see what he wants me to do. I don't want to offend him. That's who we're dealing with. And the media will never report it like that.
Well, right. That's a great point. And let me go back even just a few days before that, to maybe about a week ago, almost probably exactly a week ago, a week and a day ago, when Israel struck at several IRGC officials in Syria, at the Iranian consulate in Syria. I remember everyone saying, well, this will be World War III. I've heard that a few times. I heard that with Soleimani as well.
That averted World War III.
That's the point, isn't it? If you defang a monster, I don't understand why you think the monster is stronger.
Right. But that's also because they want the monster to be strong.
Yeah.
They want, I mean, think about that. We're dealing with really perverse people. Mm-hmm. They want the jihadis in Iran to be strong because they don't want Israel to defend itself. I keep telling people, you know, if the Americans and everybody just butted out and let the Israelis do what they need to do, they would be completely free, the Israelis would, of this threat. But because Israel is constantly having to look over their shoulder because they don't know if their ally in Joe Biden's White House is going to stick the knife in, they're constantly having to hold back, you know, equivocate, and that only makes the monster in this case stronger and nastier.
I think that what you just did was summarize 50 years of scholarship on terrorism and appeasement.
That we've forgotten, by the way.
That we have forgotten. The idea that a terrorist organization or a terrorist movement or whatever people want to use to euphemize them, the idea that they can engage in an action that receives anxious propitiation, receives appeasement and hand-wringing from its targets or its targets' allies is exactly how you pay for and receive more terrorism. It makes terrorism successful. That's how terrorism wins, when it engages in violent activity only to then be rewarded with land or the restraint of its allies who it targeted and attacked, is the victory of terrorism. I have to take a quick commercial break. Might you weigh in a little bit more on that when we come right back?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. So I'm Seth Leibson. He is Brandon Weicker. Follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, at We the Brandon, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Brandon Weicker is my guest, author of several books, including The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. He writes for The National Interest. Prior to our speaking today, Brandon, I was watching a debate that Piers Morgan hosted between between Alan Dershowitz and Norman Finkelstein, or Finkelstein.
My old professor.
Yeah, your old friend at Purdue, I guess it was.
No, DePaul.
DePaul, yeah. He's had so many different affiliations. Is he intolerable? Does no one just want to keep him for very long? Why does he jump around so much?
Well, because he's... I mean, I actually, under an NDA, I'm not allowed to talk about why he actually had to leave the call.
Okay.
But it had nothing to do with what they say it had to do with.
Okay. All right, we'll leave it alone.
I mean,
I'll make my own point.
Anti-Semites in academia loved him.
I can see why.
And the only reason they got rid of him is because of what he did, which was unrelated to... I mean, it's a personality defect.
We'll leave all that.
But he is an intolerable human being.
So his point was the only reason Hamas got elected, or the primary reason Hamas got elected in 2006, was because of the corruption of the Palestinian Authority, and that because of that corruption, Hamas had a legitimate claim to its elections. The people wanted nothing more than, oh, clean government, government reform, good government, don't you know? And because...
Yeah, he used to say that in his classes.
Yeah, okay, so you've heard his thesis on this before. Yeah. And because of... the previous 60 years of how Palestinians were governed, either by the Palestinian Authority or, I suppose, under the various different powers that have been in that land, one has to, he said it very directly to Alan Dershowitz and Piers Morgan, one has to say that one can condemn what they did, but one at the same time has to understand and appreciate that you can cause what they did. And it seems to me we're pretty fast now into the justification of any violent behavior based on the old kindergarten mantra of look what you made me do, that people can have no responsibility for actions or any proportionality.
Well, you're 100% right. Can you hear me okay,
yeah,
by the way?
Yeah, okay enough, yeah.
Okay, so we are 100% in that unfortunate moral reality of moral equivalency. This is what the man was teaching when I was an undergrad over a decade ago at DePaul University. This is no different. It's just now the world has moved toward his view, and that is because the left has been so successful in corrupting our morality, and that they believe and that they have now corrupted our youth into thinking that there's a reason for Hamas, a legitimate reason. There is no legitimate reason for Hamas. They are baby killers and rapists, and they are using their grievance against Israel's existence as an excuse to behave as awfully as they are. And by the way, Seth, this is something Finkelstein will never acknowledge. The kinds of people in Hamas, in Hezbollah, in Al-Qaeda, and the like, they're all the same. They're no different than the Bolsheviks. They're no different than the Nazis. They are all of them people who, if that ideology did not exist, they would still be behaving as badly and abhorrently as they are, because they are evil. And that is the truth.
Yes. Thank you for putting it as clearly as you did. I want to add another point to the logic of Norman Finkelstein's argument, which is if the Palestinian Authority was so corrupt that it yields to a legitimacy of Hamas, why then does Finkelstein and his acolytes and the rest of the world still back the Palestinian Authority? If Hamas is the right response to the PA because of its corruption, why does the PA still get legitimacy is my question.
Well, you know the answer.
Yeah, I do.
This isn't really, really isn't about we want to be good stewards. This is all about destroying Israel. Because Israel is a proxy in their mind for the global capitalist evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so destroy Israel and you deal a death blow to global capitalism, their great bugaboo. I'm talking about the leftists now.
Mm-hmm.
They will align happily with the quasi-Marxist Palestinian Authority, as well as Hamas, to accomplish this task. And by the way, remember, Hamas was elected. It's true. George W. Bush left us that legacy of failure. They were elected, but they then turned around immediately and shut down all subsequent elections so that they would always forever, Hamas, be in power. So the real question is, all these people like Finkelstein, who are so obsessed with democracy and freedom and all this for the head choppers, why are they not demanding that Hamas actually allow for real democracy to take place? Why are they not calling out Hamas for being nothing more than an authoritarian state as awful and evil as, say, China?
What is the answer to that question? Because I sit here and watch him and many on his side who have certain credentials. I know what they believe about, you know, democratic norms. I know what they believe about women's rights, or what they say they believe about women's rights and democratic norms. And I know what they say they believe about, you know, equality, gender, sexual, and the rest. Why does a movement that claims to be so progressive on these things, these kinds of things, call it liberal if you want. I don't care. Liberal's just as fine a word for what I'm trying to describe. Why do they support these fascistic anti-liberal entities so strongly? And I have to tell you, it leads one to a conclusion you don't want to lead to.
Well, the conclusion is that they're not, in fact, liberal.
Yeah.
They're quite illiberal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at, you know, they love to rip Republican presidents like Nixon, for example, or Trump, or whoever, for having to dare to align with autocrats to stop larger evils.
Right.
You know, in Nixon's case, it was the Soviet. Where they never talk about and they never acknowledge how the left in America, Democratic Party presidents, routinely align with totalitarian leftists abroad in order to stop right-wing movements that actually those right-wing movements would probably be better for their own people and more beneficial for the American national interest because they are inherently on the left opposed to what's good for America because they inherently believe that America is evil and it must be destroyed and brought down to size. And when you understand that, you realize that all of their talk, their happy talk, about, you know, rights and all that, it's all a bunch of hogwash. All they care about on the left is power, and they care about using that power to reshape the United States into a communist country, and they want to use that power to go after not their real enemies, who are the enemies like terrorism. They don't look at them as enemies. They want to go after their enemies in the domestic scene. They want to go after Republicans, after old grandmas who wander into the Capitol building on January 6th.
Let me pick up on that after this break.
That's who they want to go after.
Yeah, let me pick up on, let me take a quick commercial break and pick up on just that very point, too, with you, Brandon, the illiberalism of the left. Brandon Weichert is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Brandon J. Weichert is my guest. Follow him on Twix at the Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N. Weichert is spelled W-E-I-C-H-E-R-T. Brandon, there's another element to this, which I suppose I'm a little surprised it took this long, but here it is. And it's that those who are chanting on behalf of Hamas are now, without reservation, as we saw in Dearborn on Friday, chanting death to America. We have long said, you and I and a lot of people who have done a lot of research and writing about the geography of the Middle East have long said enemies of Israel are also enemies of America. Big Satan, little Satan, little Satan, big Satan. That bark is now off the tree. It seems like that any pretense of concealing that is over. A lot of us thought this about a lot of the elements of the left. We saw it during the BLM riots of 2020. We've seen it in any number of affiliated organizations of the left that stand with the PLO and the Baader-Meinhof gang and groups like that over the years. Why do we have legitimate political leaders in this country who call themselves large D Democrats giving any credence to this whatsoever? I mean, in 1976, you would not have seen a Senator Kennedy, a Senator Biden, or a Senator I don't care who supporting this crap. Sorry for my language.
No, you're fine. I think the first thing is they're not legitimate leaders.
Okay.
I don't recognize their legitimacy. I barely even think they're Americans at this point.
Okay.
And I realize that could offend some people in the audience, but that's where I'm at personally. I don't understand the Democratic Party anymore. They have become very ugly and very radical and very scary. And so I don't even recognize their legitimacy. And so when you understand that they're not really legitimate American leaders, they are there to further a partisan agenda at the expense of the national interest, then you begin to understand that they hate Israel. Because Israel is, as you say, in the eyes of our enemies, little Satan to our big Satan. Well, the Democrats, for the most part, view it that way as much as the Iranians do. And so that's what you're up against in Washington, D.C., at least in the Democrats, and oddly enough, in certain quarters on the new right. It's a very bizarre thing. But I also think, and I've said it before on your show, and I'll say it again, I think there is a spiritual battle going on. And I think that the spiritual battle, the reason there's such an obsession with Israel, this tiny country, is because there is a religious component, whether the people doing this attacking on Israel on the left even realize it. But if that is the case that we are living in, that there is a spiritual as much as a political and economic war going on, and Israel, unfortunately, is in the middle of it.
Do you think that there's also some kind of guilt complex at play here? The left, perhaps in America, perhaps throughout the world, just looks at the success of this country or looks at the success of Israel, looks at how it achieves that success, moderately liberal economic policy and moderately and legitimately democratic political policy.
Right.
And it leads to these kinds of things that no Arab state or Muslim state has been able to create. And it leads to a resentment, a guilt. It leads to that kind of guilt with the left in America, too, I think, when it looks to places like Cuba or perhaps other favorite revolutionary states.
Right, right. You have to remember, Seth, that the left is Marxist. They are communists, whether they want to say they are or not. They are Marxist and communist, and therefore that it is like a religion to them, this ideology. And so if a country is successful, like Israel, like the United States, if a country is successful by doing the opposite of that which their quasi-religion of Marxist communism demands, then they're going to hate that country, and they're going to undercut that country, and they're going to try to find a way to explain that that country is actually not good or successful, that it's colonial, and it's evil, and it's white supremacist. And it doesn't matter. I mean, they're talking about Israel. They're calling them white supremacists. I read an article the other day, and TRT, the Turkish News Service, saying that Israel is actually, Zionism is actually a white supremacy ideology. And I'm sitting there going, how can you say that? They're not even white. They're Jewish. It's separate. It's different.
Yeah.
It's a different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just,
yeah.
But that's what you're dealing with.
No, they're as Semitic as the Arab population. At least a majority of them are. Brandon Weikert is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Brandon Weikert is my guest, author of several books, including Winning Space, How America Remains a Superpower, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, Biohacked, China's Race to Control Life, new book coming out later this year on Russia and Ukraine. By the way, that was another big story that kind of came and went last week, Brandon, with the statement that Ukraine will be joining NATO. That's new. That you would have thought would have garnered a little bit of more than an hour's worth of analysis, huh?
Well, they don't want more analysis or news given to that, because that would then have an unpleasant conversation about, is it worth it? And of course, it's not worth it. Ukraine is barely a country at this rate. And yet, here we are. We are living in a world in which the media is obfuscating probably the most important story going on right now. And they're subordinating that to the eclipse. And that is intentional. That is intentional because, you know, they've been talking since 2008, really, about making Ukraine a NATO member, which is part of the reason, by the way, why Putin did invade. He said, don't go make Ukraine NATO member and we'll be fine. And since George W. Bush, they were talking about making Ukraine a NATO member. And so here we are. And now on the eve of what looks like to be a very successful pending Russian offensive in which Ukrainians are not going to stand much longer, the here comes the Western press to bury the story that Ukraine is going to join NATO. And what's going to happen is they're going to do that, and those 90,000 NATO troops in Poland on standby are going to be brought over to Western Ukraine, and they're going to try to basically take Western Ukraine as part of NATO and stop Russia from going any further beyond Eastern Ukraine. The only thing here, Seth, is that Russia is fully committed now. They think they're fighting a spiritual war against us. And so, you know, I don't know if they're going to be willing to stop, even if they see NATO troops, especially because Putin seems to believe NATO's a hollow force.
Brandon, when you look at the actions of this administration with regard to Ukraine and this NATO dangling, when you look at this administration and what it is saying to China, what it is saying about Taiwan, when you look at this administration and see what it is saying to Israel and about Israel, I kind of step back and I think, you know, we've been what were up until now the closest times we've entered the realm of World War territory, the Cuban Missile Crisis, perhaps the 1973 war, right? How scary is this era, this administration?
Well, Seth, I've said for the better part of 8 months now that World War III has already commenced.
Okay.
We're already in it. It's a question of do we go from sort of unconventional, irregular phase into a general shooting war, or do we somehow manage to avert it and kind of put the whole thing on ice? It's looking like we are inching toward an actual general shooting war. It's just going to take one spark to light the whole thing up, and it doesn't even have to be that big of a spark. And it's all because, Seth, of failed leadership in the White House. This wasn't happening under the previous administration. It never was. No matter what the media wanted to gaslight people into thinking, Donald Trump never took us to the edge of World War III. Never. Not once. In fact, he kept us out of World War III on multiple occasions, including when he stood up to Kim Jong-un and ended up befriending the guy thereafter. Biden is preternaturally incapable of preventing such a calamity. In fact, I really do think, if not him, the people who are controlling him want World War III so that Biden can be seen as being a wartime president, because they think that's how he's ultimately going to get reelected, because Lord knows he cannot run on his economics, a policy, or his social policies.
What's weird to me about that, thank you for that analysis, what's weird to me about it is we actually have a controlled study on this, and it's when Russia did invade Ukraine and Joe Biden tried to make it such a rallying point in this country, and boy, did that not work. He tried to be the wartime leader for, you know, for a non a non-participant in that war. He dedicated his State of the Union that month to, I think, about two-thirds of it. Everywhere it was Ukraine flags. Everywhere it was standing up to Ukraine. Then he started misspeaking about it. Then he started having his handlers retracting things he said about it.
Right.
I just don't know why they think the recipe is going to work a second
time. Well, because the difference is going to be there's going to be American troops directly deployed into Ukraine, which is coming. It's coming. They're going to move NATO troops and therefore U.S. forces, along with French and British, probably Canadian and Poland. There will be a huge NATO contingent soon going into Ukraine. And so he is assuming that, or his people are, that once that happens, the Russians are not going to let that fly. And the Russians are going to probably shoot at American forces, and that will trigger the war. And he figures that at that point, Americans will rally around if Americans are in danger.
Well, okay, Brandon. I usually like to end on a high note with you, but it's, you know, we're not going to artificially build one here. We're not going to create one, except to say that we have the high note of your presence on this show and your scholarship and your books. So that will be our high point. We can't say we weren't warned. We can't say we didn't know about it, because to say that means we have to say we didn't listen to you or read you. So let me thank you again for your time and brain for being with us. You betcha, Brandon Weikert. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You betcha. Absolutely. As I go to break, let me put in a word for one of our great sponsors at the Midas Gold Group. The veterans at Midas point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank. While the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank, that belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call to veteran-owned Midas Gold Group at 480-360-3000 or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. That's 480-360-3000 or MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful, Midas Gold Group, MAGA, and proud of it. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, portions of which are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They have a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio that really invests a lot of control and flexibility with you. Of course, you will get a monthly statement with no surprises. But with YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. With YRefi, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. With YRefi, there is no attack on principal if you ever do need your money back. Best of all, with YRefi, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. That's right, 10.25% fixed rate of return, not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then R-E-F-Y.com. Or give them a call at 888-YRefi-24. 888-YRefi-24. The takeaway for all of this is that if you care about the condition of this country, for that matter, the condition of the world, or the condition of your community, you can't rely on the news, and you can't rely on the education system. The education system has so propagandized our children and so warped their minds that they are no longer at the age of adulthood equipped with the ability to rationally understand complex situations, which is what the point of education originally was. As for the journalistic class, that's who feeds them. The education system, the journalism schools, they are the conveyor belt that is churning out these so-called journalists. And you can't rely on the older and more experienced journalists because they are catering to that audience, that is to say, to an audience of the lowest common denominator. To be informed, you have to inform yourselves. And you have to be able to determine and discern as well between what's right and what's wrong, between what's propagandistic and what isn't propagandistic. Just because someone has a big name and has been credible on certain things doesn't mean they are credible on everything. You have to do your work. Ronald Reagan, we were quoting last week, left the White House saying it's an informed patriotism that we want, that we need so much in America. Yes, he's right. The more important part of that was patriotism, and we need that. But you know what? The more important word is for us today, informed. Be informed. Inform yourselves and educate others. It's not enough to think that the job is being done by those in elementary, secondary, and higher education. In fact, that's where they are making the job harder. So we have to work all the harder, which is why I love being with you here every day. And thank you all so much for spending some of your day with us. Mr. Bill, young David, Terry, the rest of you. Until tomorrow, I'm Seth Leibson. God bless, and class dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.